Hello, and welcome to We Heard Wonders, the music podcast that's ego-tripping at the gates of hell.
We're back, baby.
Oh, we're back with a vengeance, and fewer throat infections than we had last week, which is good.
Yeah. So apologies for last week. Ian, you literally couldn't speak last week, which would have been blissful for me, but it wouldn't made much of a podcast for anybody else.
No, it wouldn't have. I think we'd thought about maybe can we still get something out, but then we just thought, why put out a product that's not what we're normally doing? So yeah, my apologies. I was genuinely ill last week, but I'm back. Back and better than ever, hopefully. Shall we introduce ourselves?
We shall, yep. So my name is Andrew. I buy records and write about them on Instagram at KidAGH86.
I've heard that notable luminaries around the world do follow your Instagram.
That is true. That is very true.
Cool. My name's Ian. I'm a guitarist in Glasgow band The Deadline Shakes. We've got a new record coming out real soon, and you should follow us on all the social medias, particularly Bandcamp and Instagram at Deadline Shakes. So, this week we're going to start off by chatting a little bit about some gigs we've been to recently. Is that right?
Yes, absolutely. Yep. So we both went to some live shows about a week or so ago now. But yeah, good to catch up. So
this would have been last week's banter, I think.
Yeah, this would have been like really fresh last week, but still pretty relevant, I would say.
No, I've got lots to say.
Yeah, absolutely. So I mean. The gig that you went to was a long time coming, wasn't it?
Mm. Well, it'd been cancelled, I think it was, I can't remember if it was twice or three times, but we went to see Bon Iver at the Hydro. And I wondered if, like, a little bit my kind of, you know, my passion for it would have, like, cooled a little bit over time. Because I'm a big Bon Iver fan. I always have been, really, since their first records came out. But the new record, I say in inverted commas, that this was supporting did come out in 2019.
Yeah.
And even at the time, it wasn't my absolute favourite. So I was kind of thinking a little bit nervously about this gig. Like, would I enjoy this as much as I would have done then? And the short answer is yeah. In fact, if anything, it was better than I could have actually imagined. I was not anticipating them being such a kind of fully formed, muscular live act. And lots of the tracks on I, I, the last record, which do feel a little bit thin and flimsy and stuff on the recordings, when you actually hear them played out live by the full band, they do take on a much wider scope and a bigger sense of muscularity. And I think what's really cool about them as a live act is that in certain parts now, especially from the last two records, they sound quite produced and like there's quite a lot of studio trickery going on, you think. But in actual fact, no, it's actually live. They are actually performing it live. And the stuff that sounds like it's just sequencers and stuff like that have actually been put onto synths. And so lots of the stuff is being played live, a little bit like Kanye. And obviously Bon Iver and Kanye had a musical connection. So there's a lot of stuff that's being played live that you think is just going to be a synthesizer. It's just because it's been stamped permanently on the record, you just think it's always going to sound like that. But when they play it live, it's a little bit more playful. And they also dipped way back into the old back catalogue and they played Skinny Love, which they retired a long, long time ago.
Oh, yeah.
Which was quite cool. And it was nice to be able to hear that particular track live. So, all in all, I thought they were absolutely bloody fantastic. Like, it was a great gig to go to. Unbeknownst to me, I was in the beginning throes of a throat infection. So I was, like, we were sitting on the floor of the Hydro waiting for them coming on. And I was like, oh, I'm really sore and cold and all this kind of stuff. Just, like, moaning my way through it. But as soon as they came on, like, I was absolutely transfixed, actually. They were bloody lovely. So you were at a gig as well. Who did you go see?
I was, yeah. I went to see Gabriels. Who we've talked about on the show before. I'd actually had a few people message me asking if we were going to talk about their album on the podcast. So they had an album out a couple of weeks ago called Angels and Queens Part 1, bit of a cumbersome title. And people were asking if we were going to talk about that. So I hadn't thought that we'd talk about that because we talked about the single and because they've kind of introduced this album as being part one of two parts. So there's going to be an Angels and Queens part two that's coming next year. So maybe just keep our powder dry for that. But and people have said, like, why have they broken up the album into two? Because it's like seven tracks, just over half an hour. And some people have said, well, it's because the music's so intense. Other people have said that they've grown so big so quickly that they don't actually have the tunes yet. You know, they've kind of, oh yeah, part two's coming, but just haven't made it yet. Kind of
they're laying the track while the train's still running.
I think there's a little bit of that. But I mean, the live show is absolutely sensational.
The vocal performance there was just amazing, yeah.
Incredible. And I mean, he is just an absolute star. Mm. He really is. And he's just got that presence about him. You know, we talked about the fact that he'd come up through American Idol and he just has that, you know, that presence. He knows how to sell a song that you get with doing those shows. But since doing the show, he has gone down a very different path from the path that Simon Cowell would take him down. You know, some of these songs are really quite strange, really quite kind of, you know, queasy and brooding and very, very full-throated. Like, I can kind of get that argument that it's a very kind of, it's quite a kind of rich taste to what they do. So a little goes a long way kind of thing. But yeah, when you're in the room with it, it's really quite something. It's almost as if he's kind of exercising 100 years of Black struggle or something like that. Wow, and all the kind of, all of the genres that have passed through that time are around that voice somewhere, whether it be jazz or the blues or gospel, up until hip hop as well. And you can tell all the other guys in the band, they were just kind of like slowly nodding along. You just think, we're onto something here kind of thing.
Yeah.
Just really, really great. And I wasn't so sure about the Angels and Queens track, the title track. It's this kind of it's an attempt to do a kind of Prince sex funk type thing with the baby girls and all this kind of stuff that I wasn't quite sure kind of suited him. But it kind of works in a live setting and there's just so many great songs that they've already got in their catalogue, including that Love and Hate in a Different Time, which I've talked about before. I genuinely think that's one of the best songs I've ever heard. I would go that far now. I think it's just an absolutely incredible song.
And the thing is, you're not likely to bandy that type of terminology around.
I know.
Like you're not. So,
but it's just perfect. It's just what I look for in a song and in music, really. So yeah, I mean, I think they are a very special group already. I mean, it's very early days, and you just hope that they can continue it. But I think there's a lot of kind of hype around them from anybody that witnesses it kind of thing. It is like one of these things that you witness and you want to tell people about. So yeah, I'd really recommend it. If you get a chance to see Gabriel's, go and check them out.
Go do it. Okay. Yeah. Sounds like that's a very strong recommend. Very good. We've had a wee question on Instagram as well, which we do encourage. We actually get a few. We don't always go for them, but we thought this one was perhaps worth taking because it does strike right at the heart of what is truly important about popular music in 2022. So it's from another luminary by the name of Grant Henderson, who's one of the podcast faithful podcast followers, one of the wanderers perhaps you might say. And he says, what does the podcast think of Taylor Swift cussing on her new album?
It's a big question. Yeah, Grant is a good friend of mine, and I think he kind of listens to Taylor Swift vicariously through his wife. I think she often like plays her records, and he's been kind of interested ever since Ryan Adams did that whole album version of that kind of whole album cover of her album. But yeah, I must admit, I try and keep on top of everything, but I've given up keeping up with Taylor Swift, I must admit.
Yeah, I don't give a shit.
I feel bad.
See, the thing about Taylor Swift is, I think I saw today in the news that the top 10 Billboard top 100 tracks are all Taylor Swift tracks, which is amazing in one respect. Like, I mean, that's so cool. I mean, literally one of the biggest music stars in the world. I don't know if she could, you could say absolutely she is the biggest, but I mean, she's right in amongst there as the biggest music stars in the world. Is a young woman who plays instruments, writes her own songs, obviously with a team and all that sort of stuff. So there's a lot to like there. One of the things that I don't like is the music, however. And it's just, I just can't get on board with it. I just don't like it. I haven't really heard a Taylor Swift song I particularly enjoyed. And I don't mean to be snidey podcast guy. You know me, I'll just say it as I see it. But yeah, I just can't find the heart to care too much, unfortunately. So the podcast has spoken, Grant. I do apologise. I don't know if that was the answer you're looking for. Cool. So this week, we got some pretty cool stuff to talk about. We have an interview and we have some new music. Would you like to tell us about it, Andrew?
We do, yes. So we've got an interview with the lead singer of a little known band. Never heard of them myself. No. Called the Deadline Shakes.
Yeah, I've heard them.
So we've got Greg from the group coming on to chat with us about the new Deadline Shakes album documentaries.
Yes, much thanks to you, Andrew, for having Greg and me on, because that helps us out a lot. Like, we're a small Glasgow band, and we do like to support Scottish music, obviously, the two of us on this podcast. So it's nice to be able to bring about something that's very close to my heart and to get that music and that chat out there. So it was Greg's such a good person to listen to as well. He's like a really interesting person as well. So
yeah,
I think the interview is cool, if nothing else. So so that's cool. So we've got that. And we've also got some exciting new music this week from Benjamin Clementine, Rahel, and Gift. And that will all be followed, of course, with a regular segment, which is Andrew's Vinyl Word. So yeah, pretty good podcast this week, I think, lined up, I hope.
Yes, indeed. Just before we get to that, a few very quick shout-outs to some podcast favourites. So shout-out to Little Sims, Mercury Prize winner.
Nice.
Love her. Shout-out to Fergus McCready, Say Award winner.
My boy Fergus.
Previous guest on the pod. Very, very well, deserved. Fergus, fantastic.
It's so good.
Absolutely.
It's so
cool. You know, just a majestic sounding record, I think.
Yeah,
and it I was worried that he wouldn't get it because I don't think he was there on the night, and I thought, well, maybe they would go for someone that would actually go to pick up the award. Yeah. But I think the class of that record just kind of, it just kind of trampled everything.
Oh, it's otherworldly.
Else that was on that list.
Yeah.
And the last thing that I want to say is that today, Pod Favourite Salt put a thing on their Instagram. They said, we will release 5 albums on November the 1st. So that's today.
Right.
As an offering to God. And there are 5 albums available for free download, but only for 5 days. So you get 5 days to get your downloads in. And to unlock it, you just have to put in a password. And the password is God is love. Okay, so I would recommend everybody do that and delve into what Salt are doing, because ridiculously prolific and ridiculously good. So,
well, it's 10:30 on the 1st of November, so I'm expecting a full detailed album breakdown of all 5 records at this point, Andrew.
Right.
Maybe not right now, maybe later.
Yeah, I've not had the chance to delve in yet, but I'm very excited about
that. That's cool. All right, well, without further ado, let's dive straight into this interview with Greg. So it gives me fantastic delight and pleasure to once again be playing the Deadline Shakes' new single, Ditching of the Roses, written by my good buddy Greg, which I have the joy of playing on as well. And this single is released on Friday, the 4th of November, as much as you do release a single these days. Basically, it's on YouTube, and you can go and order it on Bandcamp and all that good stuff. But it officially releases on Friday. So here we go with the Deadline Shakes' Ditching of the Roses, followed up with our interview with Greg. Here we go.
I don't know the reasons for every little thing I do. But I can guess the creepiest are because of you. That's what
From the forthcoming second LP from Glasgow's finest, The Deadline Shakes. And the album's called Documentaries, and it's out on the 25th. And it's a joy to have vocalist, keyboardist, and guitarist Greg Dingwall on the show this week. We were originally offered the guitarist, and I said we wanted the proper talent of the group. So I'm really pleased that Greg is along. Greg, thank you so much for joining us.
Delighted to be here. Thank you very much for having me. I don't know. I mean, it's obviously quite a coup that you got me on here. trying to live up to that.
I'm here too. Really hard to get you.
Yeah. I'm here as well. Like I'm also still here. You can introduce me. Nah, you don't. Fine. It's brilliant to have Greg on. It's really cool to. I thought it would be a good idea to like talk about the records, but not be me because I talk about it every week. So nice to do it from a kind of. Slightly, I'm not marking my own homework, slightly distanced point of view. So that's nice.
Yeah. And I thought we could maybe start with that track, Ditching of the Roses, because I think it's a really kind of strong example of what you guys do as a band in terms of like originality, catchiness, and kind of coming at things from a slightly different angle as well. So I can't really think of many pop songs that have got the word ditching in it. So I think that even that kind of just kind of like singles you out a little bit. Would that be fair to say that you're that's something that you try to do with your music?
Yeah, I think so. I think if anything sounds too much like anything in particular, it probably gets ditched. There has to be some kind of little spark or grab or something that sounds like it's got a germ that will be interesting to go ahead with songs. Like, we're not really a band that have got a million demos and stuff floating about, and we'll pick from here or here or here. It's kind of something doesn't get off the ground and mm-hmm. it was on to the next idea.
No, I was just going to say, like, melodically and structurally as well, the songs, you know, they kind of come from unexpected places. You know, they kind of dart off in some surprising directions. Is that something that excites you about songs in general?
Definitely. I love the Beatles and the kind of eccentricities of a lot of their work and Talking Heads, and the quirkiness is always appealing to me, and I've always preferred those albums that are a bit more like that and are a bit all over the place, compared with the ones that are real kind of a piece, and you know, everything sounds very well put together. I really respect those, and I do like albums, some albums that are like that, you know, something although it's really sprawling, like Exile on Main Street or something like that, where you've got a very definite sense that this was done at a particular time in a particular place, and that's cool. And sometimes I wish do that, you know, and have the sort of the big giant block of time and just say we're going to do everything with a particular template almost. But I find it's not what I enjoy, or I think what the other guys like doing. I think we all enjoy the variety of going for things that are a bit kind of off-piste and not necessarily worrying too much about being consistent, because I think that's it's kind of pop at the end of the day, isn't it? It doesn't really need to sound like anything in particular if it catches your attention and is interesting. There's something to maybe think about alongside a melody and all that.
Yeah, because I remember like one of the first ever conversations that I had with Ian was he'd just been, it was like a kind of all band outing to go and see Field Music. I feel that's something that they do quite a lot in their music. It's constantly shifting but very melodic as well.
I'd say chief Field Music fan in the band is Greg, for sure.
Yeah, and it's relatively recent, to be fair, because I was actually thinking about Field Music. You asked me to think about a couple of tracks that I liked or that were influential, particularly for our album. And it's only been fairly recently that I've got into the last few years. So in terms of it actually being, I like Field Music, I'm going to do something like them, it's not really been so much like that. But yeah, I think they're great. And also just the way that, because they've done so much in a very homespun kind of way, and just like the drum sounds and stuff that they get through being really obsessive and just having taken the time and putting the effort, it's really cool. And they're not bothered about being cool in the slightest. I think they are, you know, they're pretty good.
By doing that, they are cool.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, they're following their own thing, and they always bang on about how they don't make any money and all that. That's one of the part of their shtick. But no, we've seen them twice in our little band outings.
I saw them once, really, the first time.
Oh, right, yeah.
I wasn't 100% there, really. I was kind of there, but not there. Yeah, but they're super cool, and they're a great live act, actually. And they can replicate, like, their album, like, perfectly. Like, they're so accurate to their actual recorded sound, which is pretty cool as well.
They're really down to earth as well in the way that they carry themselves and the way they talk. They're very self-deprecating.
Yeah.
Just nice chaps. So, yeah, I do love Field Music.
Yeah, good. And we've talked quite a bit on the podcast about the fact that there's a long period between this and the first record, Zealots. How would you say this new one, Documentaries, differs stylistically and in terms of the production as well? I feel like this is a kind of step up from that.
Oh, good. I'm glad you say that. Thank you. How does it differ? Probably the way the track started on this one, there's more of an emphasis on keys first, piano or key sounds, or like something like Ditching of the Roses is that synth sort of melody line. And partly that's a practical thing of you can stick the cans on and do that at night if you've perhaps got a small human cutting about and you need to keep things quiet. So starting with that and then building from there and then getting the guys in and working up the tracks that way, whereas probably a lot more of Zealots was guitar based with some key stuff added to fill out the sound. So that's probably a big thing. I think the similarity is that they're both, there's lots of different stuff going on in each album. In terms of other stuff, and we recorded our own drums for a good few of the tracks, which we wouldn't have kind of known how to do on the first album. So that was a learning curve as well. Some were recording in a studio as well. There's a bit more. I used MIDI this time. I didn't use any MIDI for the first album. So this was, you know, like there's probably a bit more of a groove thing or a steadier beat focus that sounds like an old person trying to explain young person's music, even though I'm talking about our band. But I think that does come through. Detention is a good example of that. There's a couple of other tracks, like Heavy Baby as well. Yeah, those would be the main things that I think about. But it's been done over a good span of time again. So where we started and where we ended up with, you know, first song to last is, you know, my methods of recording and the other guys, the way they play, you know, it will have changed over that time as well. One of the consequences of just taking your time to get it together, I guess.
Yeah, this is true.
And the press release, and just from what Ian said as well, you know, the band have been kind of busy living in between the records, so like kind of like babies and, you know, just all that, you know, life happens when you're busy making over plans kind of thing. So how has that kind of impacted the writing for this record?
Yeah, there's definitely some references to, if not overtly about, you know, I've got a kid now, I'm going to sing about that. Thoughts of, I don't know, probably this is a good bit of subconscious stuff around that, some worries about that. There's a track, Heavy Baby, which is partly about my wee boy and I'm being a wrecking ball pretty much. there's probably other things that I couldn't point to overtly. I think it's actually the process of actually putting the tracks together and come up with the musical ideas is that's been tailored around domestic life being a wee bit different. But I think it's landed on something that's different from Zealots, which is hopefully a positive.
Yeah, just thinking from a whole band point of view as well, like we released Zealots, keep me right here, Greg, in like December of 2015, I think I'm right in saying.
Yeah, I think it was November. Yeah,
November. So we're not far away, like exactly 7 years between the release of the two records. And the first couple of years after Zealots, I mean, in the immediate aftermath of Zealots coming out, we were still busy, we were doing things, playing gigs and so on. And then I think we sort of deliberately paused to, because we'd done, I mean, it'd been quite an intense period up before this. We deliberately paused to have a think about what we're going to do. And we'd had quite a big rolling membership. So we've got the four members of the band who are fixed. And we'd also had, you know, three or four other musicians who'd rolled in and rolled out when we were playing live gigs and so on. And so in the period after that, there was a lot of sort of them kind of moving to China. That happened, and then
there's one instance of that.
One instance of that, but it felt big. It did feel big. Yep. And then after that, you know, then it felt like life was really taking over, and lots of things happened to all of us, basically, in lots of different ways. Some positive and some negative. And it's just very difficult as adults to, you know, if this isn't what you do for a living, which it isn't for any of us, then it's really difficult to say this is absolutely my number one priority today. You know, above everything else. So it was quite difficult to find the time to do it, really, as well. We all struggled with that a little bit, Greg, I think that'd be fair to say.
Yeah, definitely. You go through, I think, you end up going through big lumps where you do have a kind of hyper-focus on it for a bit. If you see a window, then you really go for it. And then there might be a fallow period where you can't do that so much. But I think having the band and having the album project, because, you know, you get a certain way and you're like, well, we are making an album and we need to, that means it's going to have to be about 10 tracks or something. And that acts as like binding agent, if you like, in your lives and making sure that you've still got that going on when there is other stuff that could take over. It's good to be able to come back to that. And let's face it, it's not a super serious thing for us to be doing. It's a joy to be able to make music and shove it out and have the benefit of social media channels and all that where you can put it out. Whatever will happen to it, you don't know, but you have the chance to do it, and we've got the ability to know broadly how to record stuff. So it's definitely a positive thing. Amongst all those growing up things that have happened over the course of the years.
Good. And yeah, you mentioned Heavy Baby as well. Thank you very much for allowing us to have that song as the title music for this pod for the last year and a bit as well. That's been great.
Pleasure. It's, no one asked me, but
I didn't ask. Yeah. There's a fat royalty check winging its way nowhere. So don't worry about that.
Yep. No, I like hearing it.
Yeah, it always kind of takes me by surprise when I'm listening to the album and the vocals start, you know, the song actually. Yeah.
The way that started, actually, because we've never really referenced it before, but obviously we're coming close to the time when we can actually play it on the actual podcast and talk about it properly. But the way that came about was when we recorded our little demo podcast, I just literally jammed some guitar noodlings that I had just at the start. I just had it in a document. I thought, we need something to go here. This will just go here just now. And then I didn't intend to leave it there. And Andrew, you texted me afterwards and said, maybe we need something a wee bit more kind of lively at the start kind of thing. And I was just like, yeah, like I just didn't have something in mind. And then I just thought, I'll just stick the start of Heavy Baby in here without the vocals. That would probably be the kind of thing I'd be looking for. And then we just used it. And that was really it. Like, it would just fit. Then it just fit the type of thing perfectly. I mean, I think Greg would have probably written us something as well if I'd asked very nicely. He probably would have, Greg.
Yeah. Of course, I would have given him a shot. You might have rejected it or something. I don't know. that's actually part of the start of documentaries, that process. Because I remember I had this idea of, we had a song called Give Us a Smile, which was it wasn't even really a full song, but it was something I had tried to come up with for the Glasgow like tourist board, because they'd used one of our songs in their Commonwealth Games ads and pictures in the pictures and stuff in 2014, and they'd said, oh, we need something else for the closing of the games, so could you try and come up with something like in a night or two nights? So I did, thinking it should sound a bit like the first one that they had used. And of course I just got rejected. What are you doing? And like Pride's, or use Pride's or something. Yeah, that's a properly produced song. I can see why you went for that one. Yeah. but then I thought, all right, do that. And then there's a song called Give Us a Lie. And I thought, well, this is some sort of tying together or some kind of theme to work on for this album of Give Us a Smile, Give Us a Lie. And we wrote that one, and you know, recorded drums for it and stuff, and then it just, we played it at a gig and everything, which, as I say, is quite unusual for us because we don't have like loads of material floating about. But then those both just kind of went by the wayside, and thankfully we had other things to replace them with. But yeah, that idea of, if someone tells you that you need to do something, gives you a brief, then that can help to focus you and actually achieving something. That's another reason why things take a long period of time, is if there's no one really jumping up and down, then this happens.
Yeah.
Good. Well, as part of this as well, we asked you to select some tunes for us, and your first selection is David Bowie and Stay. Why did you pick this track? Is this a kind of favourite period of Bowie for you, Station to Station era?
Yeah, it is. This is one that I'd listen to in like my CD Walkman, like in the house, and just thought it'd be so cool to play this live, like being a big band with the guys doing congas and all that stuff, and just to play something like that. And I think I'd seen it on him do it like live at the BBC, and it was like 2000 thereabouts, and I'd never heard it before. I knew Boy stuff quite well by that point. I hadn't heard that one before because I didn't have Station to Station yet. And I was like, that's brilliant, I love that.
Tonight, hey.
I remember buying the Station album for something ludicrous, like at the time anyway, like 16 quid on CD, and I had half the songs already from Best Ofs or whatever. And I was like, yeah, I think I'm a bit obsessive about Bowie now that I'm doing this. So almost like I had to really want to like stuff that I hadn't heard in that album, because I just forked out my teenage cash. But that one, I think it's just, I read something saying like it's a riff first and a song second, but I think it's a lot more than that. Like the chorus is so, like the way he does that expert thing throughout his career of double tracking his vocals an octave apart, and it's quite hard to do that and not make it sound naff. And like that's the chorus, a really good example of that, and that meshing together of a very funky band and this stark Europeanness that he was doing it with, that Thin White Duke character. So yeah, I love it.
Yeah, so good.
What do you think about that period of Bowie, Andrew?
Yeah, absolutely, I love it. So I think Station to Station's kind of grown in stature in my head, like over time. Like it is right up there with, for me now, is one of my absolute favourites. Hunky Dory was like my kind of first love with Bowie, so that's still probably my favourite. But then you've got Station to Station and Low probably just underneath it for me. But yeah, so good. And just the players that he used all the way through his career, but especially then, and when you're bringing in Luther Vandross and people like that on backing vocals on Young Americans and around that period, just that was so good.
Yeah, that track he does with Luther Vandross with the backing vocals. I don't know if you ever saw that documentary where they kind of show them trying to put it all together with the backing vocals going, it's, like, right, doing it and all that. It's just so cool.
Oh, so good. So cool. And I feel like there is a kind of sense of drama and theatricality to some of the Deadline Shakes music as well. And that kind of comes from that kind of glam era, like Bowie. I think there's a big wallop of sparks in the title track, the opening title track, that kind of works as a kind of curtain raiser to the album almost. Is that something that you look for in your music as well?
Can I take this one, Greg, to start with?
Sure.
I just want to take us all back in time to when the Deadline Shakes were younger. And the first thing that Greg and I thought would be a good idea to do as a band would be an opera. That was actually where we started, yeah. And we wrote one, or Greg wrote one. We wrote it together, I think. We did the bits of it together. Yeah. And we got it pretty good to the point where we're like, we could probably play this live. And we had plans to didn't actually enact them, obviously, but we had plans to, hire a theatre and invite an audience to come and sit down. And we were thinking then about, like, what visuals would we have and all this kind of stuff. And then, I'm not really sure what happened after that. We just kind of didn't.
Yeah. I think it was like, let's just do tunes instead. maybe easier. I think also we always think about that as a rock opera we wrote, but it was really just, it's just a rock opera in the same way as like The Second Side, and just as good as The Second Side, obviously, of Abbey Road, where it's just there's some sort of connection between the songs. There was some kind of loose arc, but in our minds it was some pretty heavy hitting stuff that we're rolling out there. But no, I think theatricality. Sparks, I've only heard a couple of Sparks songs, to be honest. I've not seen the film. Is it Inigo Wright? Film Sparks?
Yeah.
That looks really good. And it's a weird, something must be interesting when you actually don't really know a lot about the band that it's covering, but you still kind of want to see it. And I feel that way about, there's a lot that I'll probably like with Sparks. But documentaries, that song, because I knew that I needed to start, that we needed to start for the album. So, and it's, again, unusual that of that level of kind of planning on structural things, but it was like, right, it needs to do the job of an opening track, and that doesn't mean that it's the best 3.5 minute like self-contained song. It needs to perform a function. So there was definitely, there was something in mind with that, and it's just this kind of ludicrous as well, like the song is a bit strange, but I sort of quite like the idea as well. If we've heard that, then you don't really know what's going to come next in the rest of the album. So if it performs that function, then good.
No, definitely. And it finishes strong as well. One of my other favourite tracks on the record is the last track, Mid Air and Moonlight. Does that make a reference to documentaries as well in the lyrics? Is there a kind of like a circularity thing there?
Yeah, it's the last word. So it's the first word and the last word, which I think kind of did in the first album as well, something about black holes in the first album. Yeah, dead clever, eh?
Really. See, the thing is, like, you'd be better asking me about this, because Greg will be kind of like embarrassed to point out that this is actually quite clever. Yeah, it is. So the album starts and ends with the concept of documentaries, which I do think is actually quite clever. And yeah. I really like hearing things like that and having those types of things, you know, and chatting about things like that. These are the types of things that Greg and I would discuss in music as we were growing up and stuff. Like, we would spot details and hear things and chat about them and stuff. So it's not a huge surprise to me that that's the type of music that Greg's interested in writing and performing. That doesn't shock me at all. But yeah, it is. No, it's the opening and the closing idea, yeah.
And is there a kind of wider concept about this idea of documentaries? Because there's like references to like photographs and Instagram advertising. Is that one of the things that you're kind of exploring for the record?
Yeah, not in a really overt, or I'm not trying to make a big political point of look how terrible we are as a society and this is what we're doing wrong, but just thinking about, well, what makes up our lives now? And I was going to say in 2022, in the 25-year span of us trying to make this record. and I think it's obviously the internet and the way that it impacts on, or the way that we express ourselves and get into relationships with different types, that's there. Telly. I mean, there wasn't much that was written during lockdown on this album, but there's definitely, you know, that the point when everyone was just on Netflix and working their way through that. And people have gone through different periods in their life, not just lockdown, where they've been doing that movie, like, you know, hospital, or, you know, injured, that kind of thing, where that just becomes your world for a bit. And so that kind of pops in there, and documentaries, like maybe my wife loved Louis Theroux, so there would genuinely be a lot of documentaries going on in the house a lot of the time. It's not like a really tight theme across, you know, each song has got something that ties it back. But I'm hopeful that's all right. I mean, Sgt. Pepper's concept doesn't really hang together when you look at it.
No.
And again, it's as good as Sgt. Pepper. So I'm totally justified.
If better, actually, because there's no Within You Without You on our record. It's just all killer, no filler. So
you leave that song alone.
I know you do like it. Sorry, I apologize.
Have you heard the Love album version where the tied that and Tomorrow Never Knows together?
I've probably only heard it once, to be honest. It's not a record that I've gone back to that many times, but yeah, it's there's some really cool moments on that project, definitely. Yeah. I probably do need to spend more time with it.
I think a lot of people don't like it because they've messed with Beatles songs, but then again, they've continued to mess with Beatles songs for lots of albums after that, so maybe it's becoming more acceptable.
Well, yeah, I think that was the first project that Giles Martin did, wasn't it? So, yeah, so he's been messing with things ever since. But
I like him messing. I'm enjoying it.
I'm enjoying it as well. So your second choice is something a bit heavier, and it's Pixies and Tame from Dolittle.
Yeah.
Are they a big band for you?
Yeah, huge. The sort of David Bowie, Pixies, those kind of early teen years, just completely obsessive. And there was less to go at with the Pixies. You know, they only did a few albums until, you know, until they reformed. And at the time when I really got into them, my friends didn't know who they were, and they've become much more back into the kind of public consciousness, I suppose, having reformed. And but at the time, it felt like I was really into something quite unusual, which I wasn't really. But I think Doolittle is one of the great albums. I think it might be my favourite album. I'm not sure. It might be my favourite album. And I think Tame is just the most distilled, perfect chaos, but really controlled. I would say the vocal is, I mean, you wouldn't put it in the same sort of band as Bridge Over Troubled Water, but in terms of just an absolute amazing vocal performance that you can't, I just can't say you could top it. It has everything. You've got really, really sinister, whispery stuff. You've got the connection with Black Francis and Kim Deal's back vocals in the kind of midsection. You've got this scream that he does, and these guitars that are just sawing away, and I think it's maybe his Telecaster sawing away in the background. And it's what, I don't know how long it is, 2 minutes or something. Yeah, love it. I think it was on some NAF advert, which is maybe the first time I actually heard it. It might be a small NAF advert or something like that.
But, oh, really?
I think so. Something about a bowling alley, maybe. Might not have been small enough. Could be Clark Shoes, don't know. But it was, I remember hearing it, thinking, that's cool. And then when I heard Go Into Pigs and realised that, I was like, okay. And I feel like it doesn't get talked about that much in terms of the Pixies back catalogue. You hear a lot more about the bass and all, which I love, and Wave of Mutilation and stuff, but Tame's probably the one for me.
No, that's a great choice. Yeah, you're right. It's not really one that people talk about as much. There's just like so many big tunes on that album, I guess. But it's such a genuinely strange album as well. Like really, really odd. Oh, yeah. But just, yeah, tunes as well. And yeah, just really, really clever songwriting all the way through that record. So brilliant.
It's just pop, you know, it's really good pop writing, yeah. I reckon. It's dressed up, not dressed, but it's very aggressive. The way the instrumentation is used is so kind of brutal and spare, loud, and there's plenty going on, but it also feels very spare at the same time. But actually, the songwriting is really, it's quite poppy, I reckon, which is great. I love pop.
Yeah, it's one of the Pixies are one of the acts that we have a lot in musically in common, Greg and I. Obviously, I mean, we're in the same band, so you would expect that. But they're one of the points where we, I don't know much about the Pixies, to be honest. It's in the same way that you mentioned Sparks earlier on, Greg, and we'll listen to one or two tracks. I've not listened to a huge amount of Pixies, to be honest. I just sort of know you have that covered, you know? So you got the Pixies covered, so I don't need to worry about it.
So you don't have to.
Yeah.
The other thing I was going to say about it was that the first track in the album, that I was definitely trying to get something of that tight bass and drums thing from the Pixies, and once the kind of full band comes in and that. So not specifically Tame or your Gouge Away or something, but that kind of feeling was in my mind. So I thought it was worth mentioning.
Definitely. There's a track called Limoncello on the record, and Ian has told us a few drink-related tales on the pod over time. Is there a Deadline Shakes tipple of choice?
Ooh. Oh, I think there is, but I wasn't there for it. So
you weren't there for it?
Yeah, the one. It was the night. It's the night you and the other guys always talk about, and you reference it as the most legendary night of all time. And I just wasn't there. I think we're all drinking.
Right. Yeah.
But I wasn't there, so I can't tell you anything about it.
That wasn't what I thought you were going to say. So that was White Russians in box, glamorous box,
class.
Yeah. And that is a bad hangover. the White Russian hangover. You think it might be okay because you're kind of getting food essentially with the milk.
With the milk.
They used to be like £2 in box or something. They were really cheap.
They were viable.
There's a point in your life where a drink being £2 goes from being the best possible news to actually this is really a bad idea. I don't know when exactly that is, but that must have just been on the cusp of that decision making time.
I think I had to get quite drunk that night because I'd just come back from holiday and we're kind of running out of things to do. It was sort of a nice quiet holiday in the sky. And I think the day we were traveling back, I just had a bath and decided to do a bit of like man gardening, scaping with my wife's razor, but I didn't use any sort of like foam or anything like that. So I was in like a world of pain, burning nether regions, and we were going out for this gig, so that was going to dull the pain, and it did. I wasn't worried about. I'll just say it, my pubes. I wasn't worried about my pubes the next day, so that was good.
You'd be singing like Black Francis after that.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe that's how he did it. didn't ever check, did they? Didn't hear about it. No, I thought you were going to say about it was the Patron, the coffee Patron has made many an appearance.
Jesus,
they don't do it anymore, do they?
No, I think like during lockdown they announced Cafe Patron, Patron, the tequila brand announced that they were going to discontinue Cafe Patron, and I think all of us, like, we outwardly all express sadness about it, but internally, like, our inner organs were like, actually, this is for the best.
It had to be this way.
Yeah.
What about you, Andrew? I'm going to flip it. I'm going to flip the script.
I'm very unadventurous, to be honest. I like a nice red wine and every so often a gin and tonic.
A wee craft beer? You're into a wee craft beer?
I do like a craft beer as well, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Solid choices, but, definitely.
Nothing really banter worthy about any of those. You've been friends with Ian for many years, since the age of 6, I believe. Can you give me any pointers in terms of maintaining a long and fruitful creative relationship?
Wow. I think we picked 6 arbitrarily. I don't think we're quite sure, but it's somewhere in that region. I would go round to your house every Monday. Your mum would pick me up from school and put it go around every week. So regularity, that's a good thing. You know, being forced into an arrangement where you can't really get out of it, that helps.
Like my arrangement with fiber.
I know what that feels like.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, well, Ian taught me loads of stuff. Ian helped me like learn my first bits of guitar, really came in my hand. We're like, you know, use chords and try this and like, think about, you know, the chords you're playing when you're playing that little bit of lead and stuff. So got me into loads of bands like Flaming Lips. Ian got me into Flaming Lips and lots of others, Radiohead as well. That's Radiohead bingo for you. That's who we've done that.
Dobbers out.
That's it, Dobbers out. And then we just started mucking about with music, recording really stupid little novelty songs with the Magics program that you had. And we just kind of kept going from that, and like we had our own like other bands and stuff, but I think, well, I certainly always had in my mind that it would be cool to do something with you. I always thought, oh, that would be like a coup to get to be in a band with Ian, because he was much, much better at guitar and stuff than I was, and he was like proper.
No one said that for a really long time.
I don't know, we kind of get on, I suppose. I think that anyway.
We're bros. Well, actually, we also live these days practically down the street, literally down the street from each other now. Like, I'm 3 or 4 minutes walk from Greg's house, which wasn't by design, but also when I was, because Greg moved in here first, but when I picked this house up, one of the things was like, oh, like my best friend lives down the street. Like, this is really good news. And I assumed that would mean that we would make loads and loads and loads of music and probably like 40 albums and stuff, and that's really not happened. But we have drank a lot more together since
that's
then.
That's true. Maybe that's all to come, who knows?
Who's to say?
I think it's good having a little project amongst friends as well. Maybe you guys are finding that with the with the podcast.
Like, oh, definitely.
It just helps to have a little bit of business in there sometimes to give ourselves some purpose.
Yes.
Oh, absolutely.
Floating marble.
It's important to have a thing.
You gotta have your thing. I would like to now flip the script as well, actually, and just take this opportunity to say that one of the things that's made me want to have an ongoing, like, how did you describe it, Andrew? Artistic relationship or whatever it was you said there. What did you say?
Yeah, creative relationship. Fruitful creative relationship.
With Greg is that, like, I did start playing the guitar first, and I do remember, like, saying to him, you should listen to this band, and I do remember showing him chords and all that stuff. But Greg is actually a genius. He hates it when I say this, but he's literally a musical genius.
I think it's more your listeners who won't appreciate that. Anyway, carry on.
Well, I think it genuinely. I've been thinking it for a really, really long time. I remember when, I don't think I've ever told you this, Greg. Maybe now's a good time. I remember when, like, because when we weren't making music specifically together, we would, like, send each other things over. So I would be like, oh, my band's done this song here, and I'd send it over, and he'd send things back. And I just remember the first time he sort of sent me a recording, I was just a little bit... jealous isn't the right word. Like, it's not. Like, I never feel jealous about anything my pals do. I always hope they do great things. But I was just like, how did you do that? Like, I was just... I mean, because it was... Like, how did you actually think of doing all these things? Like, it was just so... in my mind, ahead of, you know, the creative process that I was at that time capable of. I was just thinking about, let's just make everything really loud and I'll just shout over the top of it and that'll be really good. Whereas Greg just had a much better sense of space and planning out songs and knowing that there's a... We were talking earlier on about how he creatively writes tracks and does things in ways that you don't expect. But sometimes you listen to bands and you think, they're doing things in a way that you don't expect because they don't know how to do it. Whereas I always know Greg is making a creative step in another direction deliberately. And I think that makes a real difference. Like, I think when people listen to documentaries, and I'll take a step out of being in the band for this point, I'll just say, when I think people listen to documentaries, if they actually listen to it, they'll realise that there is quite a lot of clever stuff going on and it is actually pretty well thought out. And whether that means that it will breach the mainstream and be listened to 10 million times. Whether that's a barrier to that or whether that'll help it, I don't really know. But I know that I really like listening to it and I liked playing on it as well and I like doing it. So I think it helps if you have a sort of... I think it helps if you have a respectful relationship with each other and you respect what each other can do. And I'd say that we think that about all of the Line Shakes, not just us two.
Yeah, I was going to say that. I think that point around that different... folk having different strengths is a big one. You are good at actually simplifying things at times when I might be getting sort of lost in the weeds a wee bit, or whether that's to do with writing songs or arrangements for the band, or like, are we going to do a gig? You know, you'd be the one who'd say, let's just do it, just actually do it. It's better to do things than not do things. Martin is very good. Martin, the bass player, is exceptionally practical, but also a great artist on your podcast artwork and all the band artwork. So he's kind of got those two sides, but probably the side we see the most, because a lot of this is about logistics and just pulling folk together, is that let's just get this thing done. And then Thomas, the drummer, has got these really creative ideas all the time about things that we can do. And is a really good artist in themselves. So that's and sometimes that can be a wee bit frustrating when you're doing this now and the lives or lives the way they are. Is like there's so much that you can pull to actually do stuff together, and often you just feel like, no, we have to focus on the meat and potatoes of getting, how do we get this album done, how do we get this, you know, promoted or whatever. If we're doing a gig, how do we get that gig pulled together? There's loads of potential. I think as long as you keep feeling that potential is there, then that keeps it exciting. You know, I think once you start really, you're just like doing the same thing over again, then that might still be fun, but it's always like the idea that there's always something bigger and better next time. You know, the next time we do an album or an EP or whatever, we'll have learned from the previous two that we've done. That's a really long answer. I can't really remember what the question was now. What was our favourite drink?
No, that's all good. I'm going to ask you about the future in a second, but we'll get your final choice first of all. So you've gone You mentioned the Flamer Lips earlier. You've gone for Ego Tripping at the Gates of Hell. Is that the name of it? That's just the full title.
That's the one.
And why have you gone for this? I mean, we obviously are big Flamer Lips fans on the show, but yeah, why have you gone for this?
So this is off Yoshimi Battles the Pink Robots, which was, I guess, maybe when the Flamer Lips were at their commercial peak after the Soft Bulletin. Soft Bulletin is my favourite album. I love Yoshimi as well. This track just has this, it kind of sums up that album for me. Like a bouncing ball on some guy laughing in a quite a sinister way, and then it just cuts in with this bass line that's really simple but really sticks in your head, but it's just got this wistfulness, this sadness to it that and it's kind of restrained and buttoned down in a way that when I think of the Soft Bulletin, it's really joyous, and you think of this massive drum sound that they've got on, you know, Race for the Prize, things like that. This is a lot more kind of internal, a bit like I was talking earlier, we're coming up with this stuff for our album. You know, you've got the headphones on and you have to be a wee bit quiet, just come up with the ideas, and that shapes how the songs go. I've no idea. I know that there were probably some drugs issues and stuff with the band at the time they were doing this. And it feels like that comes across, and it's just got this, there's lovely lyrics in there. That what one of the things the Flamer Lips do really well, I think, is they've got lyrics that could tip over into being really trite or kind of overly simplistic, but somehow don't end up that way and end up really kind of giving you a bit of a lump in the throat. I think that one's got something like, I was wanting you to love me, but your love it never came. All the other love around me was wasting all the way. And there's no big loads of syllables in any of those words. There's just something about it that gets me. And you're like, Do You Realize is on the same album, and that's like the ultimate expression. Like, oh, geez, this is really simple and really affecting. But Ego Tripping just has something about it, and the backing vocals is a guitar, the way the acoustic guitar changes chords just right towards the end of the song. Again, it just kind of, it's a wee gut punch somehow. So yeah, I could have picked loads of Flaming Lips songs, but that was the one that I thought, go with it.
Yeah, you should do a music podcast. That was really good.
Oh, thanks. I'll leave that to the experts.
Well, I would not consider myself one of those.
I'm curious about you. Are you somebody who collects records? Do you like to own the physical copy of things? Like, will you be queuing up to get the multi-disc anniversary issue of Yoshimi that's coming out in a few weeks' time?
I'm not, and I really respect, because you're one of those guys, 100%, Andrew, yet, and I like the idea of it, definitely, but I've never quite got to that point. Maybe I will, maybe that awaits me. But
You're a slow processor of music, I think. Not like you're stupid. I mean like, when you like something, you really like it for a long time and you think about it like a lot. So you're not really the type of person who's gonna like, I don't associate you with listening to random Spotify playlists with like 40 different songs. Like, I associate you with like a deep dive on a particular act for a long time. And then you sort of finish with that and then move on to something else.
It's an obsessive characteristic for sure, which is useful sometimes and holds me back in other ways. But
Steely Dan was your recent one, I think.
Steely Dan, that was kind of locked in, I think. That was one I thought, oh, I need to listen to Steely Dan. Everyone talks about it. Just, oh yes, that's me sorted for ages. That's a run of album. I think you talked about that in one of your podcasts about, you know, the artist who'd had sort of unimpeachable 5 album runs, was it, or something? And I was cheering, I was whipping in my headphones quietly so as to avoid waking the parents. Yeah, I think that's probably fair. Although I have to say, listening to your podcast, which I very much enjoy, I don't know if I've said that in the recording portion. It's made me a bit more open-minded. Like, I was messaging you, Ian, a couple of weeks ago, like, oh, the Arctic Monkeys song, they're about Mirrorball. Like, I think that's a really impressive bit of work. And this other one's really bowled me over because I now can't remember the name of it.
Andrew will tell you.
The vinyl word song, Valentine.
Oh,
Snail Mail. That's a great song. And I wouldn't have ever sought that out, you know, or come across it had I not been listening to the podcast. So, you know, I'm just prizing open the mind a little bit. I think sometimes maybe it's an insecurity thing of trying to write your own songs, that sometimes I feel like if too much input or hearing too many examples of other people doing it really well can put you off. Yeah. You need to like close it off and think, no, I need to try and do my own thing. Anyway, I don't have a good record player, so I think that is something I need to get in the future. I've got like little portable ones, but nothing that would sound good. So that'll be, it's an expensive business though, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So in terms of this record then, have you got any plans to do any promotion around it? Are there any kind of little milestones that you're hoping to hit? I noticed that you'd put up a wee acoustic track today for one of the tracks as well. So are you going to continue to do things like that? Are there plans to do some live shows?
We'll do... Yeah, it'd be nice to do more little bits and bobs for content. Content is king, gigs probably not soon, hopefully in the future. That would be really cool to I guess that's probably the most likely next project, is focusing on doing something live again.
The funny thing is that we're actually quite a good live band, and I'm not saying that because I think that myself necessarily. I do think it myself, but we've heard that quite a lot. People have told us that, like, we can put on our night, you know, with the right level of practice and preparation, everything, we can be very, very good. But we found with the documentaries material, We were just trying to find the right way to present it, and we just up to this point hadn't quite got it. And I think we'd talked about it quite a lot, and we sort of realised that maybe trying to work out how to play it live was just stopping us putting the record out. Mm-hmm. So we decided, let's just get it out, and then it's out. And if we choose to play songs off it down the line, if we work out ways to do certain songs or whatever, then we will. I mean, Ditching, for example, is one that we've played quite a lot live in rehearsal rooms and stuff, but as a keys-led track, without us having copious keys players, is quite difficult to do in a live setting. So you end up having quite a lot of it as pre-recorded, like backing track material, and we would prefer to be genuinely live most of the time. So it really was becoming a bit of a bind to try and strike that balance. So we just kind of thought, let's just go ahead, put the record out, and then we can move on afterwards and, you know, think about it anon.
Yeah, and we'd never done that before. Like, that's one of the things of being in a band for a long time, is methods change and what becomes normal changes. And like, remember when we were doing gigs a couple of years ago and we were starting to feel like we're dinosaurs, because we were like, oh, we need a drum kit and, you know, a bass amp and two guitar amps and all that. And you'd all the lots of, you know, bands who just had these very portable setups. And
it's a laptop, really.
It's all computers these days, man. It's all computers. You have to confront that a little bit. If you keep at it, like, is what you're doing still relevant? Is the right way to do it? Do we try and move into that idea of using backing tracks to flesh things out if we're going to keep recording music that's quite full? Or do you say the live thing is a different approach to the songs? What do you think in that? Like, when you go to gigs, Andrew, like, do backing tracks bother you? Do you accept that as being part of modern gigs?
Yeah, sometimes I feel like it can. As soon as I notice it, then it becomes a problem, I think. Yeah, if there's too much of it that is being used. You know, it tends to be through a keyboard, doesn't it? Like, when they're imitating all the string parts and all that kind of stuff, when that starts to get in the way, then it does bother me a little bit.
Yeah,
I think most people are quite happy to know that the live experience is a different thing from the, you know, from the recordings. I personally don't have a problem with that. But yeah, it would be nice to be. Once you're getting tens of millions of streams, you'll be able to get a keyboardist in for the night.
Oh, we do have a keyboardist.
For that one night, we have a keyboardist.
We you know, persuaded him to come back from China. He came back exclusively for us. But we just kind of shelved those plans temporarily because, yeah, we just prioritised getting the record out and promoting it. So it's quite an exciting time period for us. It's all kind of happening and keeping us busy. And so... So yeah, watch the social media space for Deadline Shake. So you can obviously find us on Bandcamp, on Instagram, on Twitter, on Facebook, and you just search up The Deadline Shakes or at Deadline Shakes and you'll find all our stuff there.
Yep, and I've been really enjoying my preview of the record. It's like I said before, a really colourful record. Lots of great tunes on there, ones that I've been humming the last couple of days. So yeah, I'm really excited to see how it does for you guys. And we should say that it's out on the 25th of November. It's Documentaries, Deadline Shakes. And here is the second track on the record that's going to play us out today in a second. So I've really got some news is the track. So that's going to play us out. Thanks so much for being on, Greg.
No, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And best of luck with the record.
Cheers, Andrew. Cheers, Ian.
Why did you?
Okay, guys, so that is the Deadline Shakes with their track, with our track, I've Really Got Some News. And that's probably, I think that is literally the first time that track's been heard anywhere, unless you caught one of the Deadline Shakes' final live shows in like 2016. I think the last live show we played was in the King Tut's Wawa Hut in 2016. And we probably played that somewhere in the set. But the reason that's that was possible is because that is probably the oldest track that we play. And Greg actually wrote that like so long ago. I don't actually know specifically when, but it's something like 2008 or something like that, or maybe even older. It's maybe even older than that. And it's been kicking around in one form or another. And we just were looking for tracks to play live, and we were looking for things like what's kind of upbeat and what's kind of funky and cool. And we just sort of, someone suggested, what about that the old track that Greg had, that we demo thing? Could we do that? And it's developed over time. So like the end sections and like very specifically how the guitars and drums and bass all interact with each other is all new for this record and all new for the way we eventually played it live. But it is incredibly an old thing, and all the lyrics and everything are totally intact. Like, it's pretty much exactly as it was in that sense. To just show you how for this is what I was talking about in the interview. He was so forward thinking, like he just knew how to do stuff a million years ago. So yeah, I love that song. That's probably one of my favorite tracks on the record. The recordings come out clear as a bell. I really like my guitar part on it, and I think it's a tune. So there you go.
It is, as you say, it just pops out the speakers.
Yeah. Cheers, man. Okay, that's so much Deadline Shakes content. Even I'm thinking, right, come on now. Jesus, on with the show. Right, so we've got a new track this week, and this first one is by Benjamin Clementine. Do you think there's anything we need to know before we hit play on this?
Only that he's a North Londoner. He won the Mercury Prize for his debut in 2015.
Okay.
He followed up with a very strange esoteric record called I Tell a Fly. And this is his just released third LP.
Okay, very cool. And I just want to give a pre-warning to everyone that because of life reasons, because I've been ill basically for the last week, and Andrew and I have both been incredibly slammed with work in the last couple of days, I'm listening to these tracks for the first time right here with you guys live on the podcast. So if what I say is a load of rubbish, I do apologise, but I shall do my best. I shall do my best. I've done this before, so this isn't too scary. Okay, so this track is Delighted by Benjamin Clementine. Here we go.
Here we go again. Here we go again. Up the bogles, still gravity intervene. Do the best you can, but nothing's guaranteed. We lean, we learn, we earn, we turn, we burn. We lean, we learn, we earn, we turn, we burn, then start again. 'Cause we're delighted. Whoa. I can't count with my scissors like fingers the amount of times I've been here. But I'm sure I'll get to the bottom of it someday. With all due respect to those I've caused so much pain, if I were given a second chance, I would do it all again. Up the bogles, till gravity intervene. Do the best you can, but nothing's guaranteed. We lean, we learn, we earn, we turn, we burn. We lean, we learn, we earn, we turn, we burn, then start again. 'Cause we're delighted. Whoa. We go again. 'Cause we're delighted. Oh, the consequences are yours, and the frequencies are yours, the possibilities are yours, 'cause the vision is yours. We lean, we learn, we earn, we turn, we burn, then start again. 'Cause we're delighted. Ooh, we start again. 'Cause we're delighted. Ooh.
Oh, lovely stuff. So that is Delighted by Benjamin Clementine. Well, I have to say, instant positive reaction to that. That was super, super cool. Will I just go ahead and give my instant thoughts, Andrew?
Yeah, absolutely. Go for it.
So I thought Benjamin's vocal was a little bit like Arthur Lee. Something Arthur Lee-esque about the delivery. And it's also almost like a constant vocal. It's like the whole track from start to finish. And I don't think there's much in the way of other voices that I recall. So it's quite a sort of singular, unique type of performance. It does feel like it's all sort of revolves around him, and everything seems focused on the vocal performance and the lyrics. But musically as well, it did feel super cool. So it starts with strings. I got a little bit of this might be a lowbrow reference, but I did get a little bit of Bittersweet Symphony, the Verve vibes right at kickoff of the track. I just thought of the moving, like sawing strings, and for a track which basically doesn't have drums for quite a lot of it, it does propel itself along at quite a good old rip. The bass guitar, or the bass synth, whatever it is kind of plod, you know, prodding us along a little bit as we go, and it has a kind of like a a nice atmosphere, I think, created the contrast between the strings, the vocal and the bass. And then when the drums did drop at the 2 minute mark, you might have saw my, you might have seen my face there on Zoom. I was like, ooh, yeah. So, so that's super cool. I was just managed to squeeze in a little bit of reading about Benjamin Clementine before we started the podcast, and he just sounds like the coolest guy like ever. Like, he just seems like an impresario, like a kind of an auteur, you know, a kind of unique sort of performer and everything. So
yeah, and he looks ridiculously cool as well.
He does, like, it's, I just really, saw a really unique look. Yeah, super cool. And he lives in Paris as well, which is obviously as cool as you can get, really, isn't it? Probably smokes cigars and that as well. I don't even know, man. Probably. So yeah, no, super cool. Like, he looks amazing, and that track sounds fantastic. If I was going to say anything critical about it, I'd say that the sort of hooky bits are maybe not super sweet, and there's maybe a sort of harshness to the sound of the vocal overall that probably means that this isn't totally a memorable track. Really cool and very enjoyable, but not something that I think is necessarily going to stick with me forever. But then again, that is a first listen, and I wouldn't be against listening to it again. So, but yeah, overall, super cool, man.
Good. Yeah, excellent. I mean, he's got a very kind of distinctive voice, really fascinating, quite arresting voice, I would say. Mm. He often reminds me of Nina Simone. You mentioned Arthur Lee, but I think Nina Simone was the voice that tends to come to mind for me. And yeah, I mean, that voice isn't necessarily for everybody. But as I was saying, like, some of his previous work has been quite challenging, quite eccentric, but this is probably his most kind of emotionally and musically direct thing that he's done, I would say, so far. And I think it's all the better for it.
Yeah.
And you mentioned Bittersweet Symphony. I was kind of thinking of an equally kind of lowbrow reference, and it's kind of in the air at the moment, with people talking about the Revolver reissue. I was thinking of Eleanor Rigby. They're kind of like the chamber string arrangements. They kind of lead you down the different roads and avenues of the track. They kind of tell the story for you,
yeah,
in a way, which I think is really effective. And there are these kind of soul-stirring, slightly spooked mass vocals that come in towards the end, mm-hmm. that kind of add that kind of extra drama, gravitas and grandeur to the track. So, yeah, I do really like this. I was interested about the word delighted in this context. I don't know what you think about that, because, like, there's something about the way that it's used in this context that kind of takes it past this idea of being very happy about something.
Is it like
it's kind of taking them into the kind of, I don't know, I was kind of thinking it kind of takes them into this kind of like transcendent, almost kind of blessed, or, you know, it's like something that's kind of like kind of touched by the sublime or something like that. I don't know if I'm kind of reaching for that, but there's something about the way that he delivers it that, and the way that it's used in this track, that, as I say, it's kind of it's used in a slightly different context from the way that you would normally use that word.
Is it possibly the opposite? Like, because he says, I've got the lyrics here in front of me. He says, "We lean, we learn, we earn, we turn, we burn." So those are all like experiential things, things that happen to you, and then he says that twice, and then says, "Then start again." Because we're delighted. Does it mean, like, is it a play on the idea of being lit up, but then being delighted in a sense? Now that's
no, again, I like that. I'm kind of like reaching,
but it all those things, those experiences. Some of them are positive, like learning, but burning, not necessarily positive. I don't know. So yeah, there we go.
No, like that. Yeah, that kind of idea of being put out, but you're growing and learning from the process, so therefore it's a positive.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's an interesting track. And as I say, I think it is one of the best things he's done. It actually puts me in mind of Gabriel's in a way. It's got a kind of similar emotional intensity to it, mm-hmm. to a lot of the Gabriel stuff. And he's actually doing the same thing. He's releasing this album in two parts. So the first part has just come out, and then the second part is coming out next year. So I don't know if it's a similar idea. Maybe it's just a little bit too rich for listeners to stomach in one sitting kind of thing. And the album's called And I Have Been, so I'm assuming that the second album is going to finish that sentence, and I have been doing something.
Making an album.
Yeah, there's rumours that maybe this is going to be his last record as well, because he's pivoting into acting. He was in June last year.
Was he?
Yep.
What role?
It was a kind of semi big role, but he's just as I say, he's just a very kind of striking looking figure. So I think he's maybe hoping to do that maybe more full time, but I hope it's not true because I do really enjoy his music.
Yes, I agree. Ah, super cool, man. That's a good place for us to start with the new music this week. Okay, so it's really been a while since we've had a track which causes us bother to pronounce. But I'm just looking a little bit like at this track here, and I'm thinking, right, so this is by Rahil.
I can help you out with this one.
Go for it. Please do. You're seeing floundering.
It's a lot easier than you think. It's just out of my head.
It is a lot easier than I thought it was going to be. It is a lot easier. It doesn't look like that, but it does sort of. At a me head. At a me head. Like that? At a me head. How am I doing? At a me head.
I should say as well that this is...
sorry.
just to give a bit of setup, this is a cover version. So this is a cover of a track by a guy that I love called Shuggy Otis, who made a psychedelic soul cult classic in 1974 called Inspiration Information. This is a record that a lot of kind of record collector types really kind of revere. He's one of those kind of one-man band home studio guys that was doing stuff. So it's, but he's not quite on the same kind of level of virtuosity as somebody like Stevie Wonder or Todd Rundgren, but he kind of gets lumped in with them because he's more obscure.
Not on the same level as Stevie Wonder. Must be terrible.
Absolutely.
But, how many of these lost psychedelic soul records are there? You record collector chaps must be just bloody tripping over them at this point. There's so many.
You're right. But I mean, these records have been growing in stature over the last kind of 20 or 30 years kind of thing. This record was kind of like a blueprint for a young Prince when he was starting out. So Prince was kind of doing something quite similar. So that gives you a little bit of background to it. But this is a cover version by Rahil. And I think it's different enough from the original to make it interesting.
Okay, well, that's usually a good enough recommendation for me when you say that. So let's listen to Rahil with Out of Me Head. Here we go. Right. So that is Rahil with Out of Me Head. And yeah, that was quite a lot to process, actually. Like, there was a lot going on there. I have thoughts. It's okay. Don't worry. In case you're wondering if that was me sort of saying, I got nothing to say, cover for me. I have stuff to say, don't worry. That was quite interesting. I'll tell you what took me by surprise the most out of everything in that track. So based on your description, you know, the intro, the sort of grooviness and the sort of vibe of the intro, I was thinking, okay, I sort of know roughly where we are here. And then about 20 seconds in, there's sort of like a descending sort of key change. Yeah. Or it just sounds like everything's been sort of twisted and warped in some way. And as an opening to a track, that's quite a strange choice to make. Not a bad one, I don't think, because as I said, I'd kind of already pegged it. Ah, I know where we are with this. And then it just kind of went, nope, we're going somewhere else. So that's a pretty cool way to start the track, yeah. That is interesting. That was pretty cool. Very funky, very groovy. I really like the dreamy, trippy.
It's a vibe, man.
It's a vibe. Yeah, man, it's a vibe. But it was very, very trippy, dreamy vocal, which I do like. I know that you like that vocal style for sure. Like, that's, you're all over that. I know that. Is that right?
Yeah, I think that's fair. But yeah, it's interesting to, if you listen to the original, the original is very kind of stone sounding. It's a similar kind of, you know, pacing to that, but it's a little bit kind of warmer, a little bit fuzzier. But here, you're very, very much in a kind of post XX James Blake production thing going on, which really kind of updates the track and means that it isn't just a kind of a retread of what's been done before. It's a kind of living, breathing thing, which is what I like about the track. She's really kind of updated it in a quite a cool way, I think.
If I can just jump in on those comparisons here, Andrew, before we just move away from them. Like, in a way, it feels like that is the sort of vibe and sound of XX, but they're much more straightforward, at least with their earlier stuff, much more straightforward in terms of song structure.
Yeah.
And then James Blake is even less straightforward in terms of song structure, but again, a kind of similar dreamy kind of out there sort of overall sound. So those are two pretty apt comparisons there, I think, but for kind of different reasons. Yeah,
I think so, yeah. And they have a kind of detached thing, but also making it very soulful in quite a modern way, I think, which I think is what Rahil was going for here. Yeah. And yeah, just so many kind of interesting textures and details that kind of flit in and out of the track. The vocal is quite stone sounding, quite narcotic.
Yeah.
But then you've got, as you say, the backing is just constantly shifting around it, which I think is really quite interesting. Yeah. And then towards the end of the track, you get those kind of discombobulating, disembodied voices that kind of mirror the idea of the out of my head thing. So yeah, I think it's quite a enticing little track.
I'd agree. I think that's something that would definitely benefit from multiple lessons. And I think, see, that track, you know, I'm not saying I would inflict this on anyone, but I could imagine a scenario where if I went and got my guitar just now and kind of worked out the chords, you could play that as a kind of, almost like a kind of, just a straightforward pop song, or like a kind of a standard type of track almost. But they've obviously tried to take that aspect of it and just kind of twist it slightly, and I think that's what gives it its kind of, yeah, the vibe, which is what you mentioned earlier on. It's all about vibe, that track, isn't it? It's not any one individual element of it. It's about the feeling overall more than anything. I think the vocals play into that significantly, because the vocals, in a way, to me, weren't the main thing. They were just part of the overall wash of what was going on. And I mean that not from a production standpoint. I don't mean they were in the wrong place or whatever. I just mean that, like, it was designed to kind of just all blend.
Yeah, they're unshowy vocals.
Yeah, I think so. But not untalented either. I think there's a good singer there as well. So that's cool. Yeah, that's pretty cool. Yeah.
If I could give so she's got a 4-track EP coming out called Sun Songs, and all the tracks are cover versions, and they're just tracks that are kind of important to her. So I've got a quote from her. So she says, the artists of these songs are pioneers in creating worlds of their own music, worlds where people like myself have the pleasure of stepping into them when listening to the records. I wish to create a similar world honouring these songs, but through my own lens, the same lens that I made my album through. So yeah, so she's got an album coming out next year.
Mm-hmm.
And this EP is just a kind of wee taster for it. So there's a Shuggy Otis track. There is a track by a psych folk artist called Kim Jung Mi, who I like as well. Okay. You'll be surprised to hear. Yep. She's got a really lovely record called Now, which I would recommend checking out. There is a cover, you've actually mentioned them already, Arthur Lee. There's a cover of Arthur Lee track, I Do Wonder. And there's a cover by Yoko Ono as well.
Sounds a bit commercial to me, actually. I don't know. Chart bothering there, I don't know.
Yeah, but yeah, these are quite impeccable influences as far as absolutely. I'm concerned. So
the world is better with records like this in it. Absolutely. I mean, who could say otherwise? I mean, you don't have to like love that. You know, you don't have to be I wouldn't consider myself a massive fan of that particular genre of music that we listen to there. I'm actually not even really super sure what genre I would call that, to be honest. But it's not something I would necessarily choose to listen to. But then you put it on, you're just like, that just feels really good. Like it just locks into a nice, it takes you on a nice little journey. And I think if folk only ever listen to that once, if our podcast listeners only really hear that once through this podcast, I don't think their life has been made worse by listening to it, I have to say. I think in our podcast, it's been made better by having it on it. So yeah, very positive for me. I really enjoyed that. That was fun. I'm going to listen to that again. Not now, because obviously we've got the rest of the podcast to do, but I'll listen to it anon.
Good. Excellent. Yep, so that's coming out on the Ninja Tune imprint Big Dada, also the home of Yaya Bay, who we've talked about before. And there's a bit of similarity there. It's a kind of alternative R&B thing going on. But yeah, very cool.
Very nice. Okay, so does that take us on to our last new track of the week? So I don't know anything about this track. Can you just give me like maybe a couple of words? Maybe give me like a couple of command words for my brain before I listen to this. What am I going to hear here?
Brooklyn, February, psychedelia.
Ah, it's a triple deck of psychedelia. That's what you get to see. Here we go. Right. So this is Gift with their track Feather. Here we go.
Thank you.
This feels like it's going to be a really long, gradual fade out. And here I drop in over the top of it. So either that is Feather by Gift. And I feel like I got a lot of processing time with that quite long, expansive track.
It's a really strange experience watching you listen to it. Like, it's like when you like show somebody a comedian that you really like and you say this guy's really funny, and you're just watching them like the person, just like, are they laughing yet? Are they laughing yet?
Yeah.
And you kind of second guess yourself, and it's like, yeah, it's an interesting experience. I've kind of gone to back and forth with this track. Like, sometimes I listen to it and I think that it's maybe too stately. There's too much time for that kind of absorption, as you say, and not enough happens. And then other times I feel like it just is perfectly paced and the stateliness is the whole point of it.
Were you worried that you'd given me Russell Howard instead of Dave Chappelle there a little bit?
Maybe. But yeah, I'm interested to hear what you think of it.
Well, lots of things, actually. I don't know what I was doing as I was listening to that. I mean, facially, I don't know what I was doing, but I was thinking very hard, and I was doing a little bit of minor light research in the background. So I think lots of things. I guess one of the first thing that jumped out at me there was, and this is maybe not what you're going to expect me to say, is that I have made music that sounds like this in my spare time, like that I've never like released and never will find an avenue for. But I sort of find that, see, if I was to sit down of an afternoon and set myself up with, like, I've got my synth over here, I've got my bass guitar over here, my, you know, and all this sort of stuff, likely I would end up producing something that sounds a bit like this.
Okay.
My closest friends would know this from the little demos and things I've sent around. So not Deadline Shakes and not other band projects or whatever, but just on my own, I'm inclined to make music a little bit like this. I'm not sure why, because I don't ultimately like really enjoy it, but it's quite satisfying to make music like this. So I do really understand where Gift are coming from in terms of wanting to make something that sounds like this, because, as you say, that the sort of the stateliness, and it means that like every minor alteration you make to the pattern feels ultra significant to you when you're making it. And then hopefully you lock the listener into the same groove and they're just there with you and they get it.
Yeah.
So one of the like nice little details is the bass is playing like a really, really, really simple pattern, just following the root note of every chord. It's like dum 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 dum, and then on the last chord of each section, it goes dum 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 dum, like that. And little tidbits like that are usually enough to kind of just keep your ear kind of ticking over. It is very, 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 very repetitive though, like ultra, ultra repetitive. Yeah. And you're gonna hate me for saying this, right? But in my head, I said guitar solo 4.5 to 5 minutes. I knew it was coming. I knew it was coming. And it was so lo-fi and so, I don't know. The performance of a guitar solo, I hope that the guitarist wanted it to sound like that in terms of the notes they were playing. Because it was like, I don't know how to best say it, amateurish in terms of like the actual performance. They didn't really select a melody or anything to kind of play about with. They didn't kind of go with the sort of, your mind. They didn't like play that out on the guitar and then kind of twist it about a little bit. They just sort of went, sorry for these strange noises I currently am making, but that, I feel like with a track like that, that's not the time to bring in like your virtuoso playing. It's not the time for Eddie Van Halen, but it is the time for like a really strong, clear guitar melody that comes and just takes the song like up one more notch and just goes to another new place. It could have maybe even been accompanied with a chord change and a change of direction, you know, a key change or a chord change. I liked the bit when the kind of like industrial-esque drums came in about two-thirds of the way through and just added another layer. But on the whole, I think I'm falling down into the, this is just maybe a bit too repetitive to be really, really enjoyable. And I'll not waffle too much further, but I will just say, if this track was 3 minutes long, would it be significantly worse? Do you know what I mean?
I think the journey is like one of the main points of the song. So I think it kind of needs to be 6 minutes. But I think you're right. Listening to it, especially that time, I welcomed the guitar solo, but I wanted it to be a little bit more, a bit more fulfilling, I guess. Just kind of take the track into outer space, kind of thing, and it doesn't quite do that. I should say that the rest of the record isn't all like this. So that there are some moments that are a little bit more kind of upbeat, a little bit more kind of riff heavy. Mm-hmm. The group that they get compared to the most are Tame Impala, because it is primarily one guy who makes all of this stuff. So he's called TJ Frieda, and he's the one that writes the tracks. He builds them up with the, you know, demos and tapes and loops and all that kind of stuff, and then he gets a band to kind of flesh out the whole thing. But yeah, it's very much his vision. So there are some really cool tracks on it. There's a track called, where is it? Sorry.
That's all right. Whilst you're looking that up, I might just say as well that not to interrupt, but just to help you while you're looking that up, mm-hmm. I saw an image of them whilst I was doing my research there. They are achingly cool. Like, they have a great look and a great image. It all looks hyper fashionable and all that kind of thing. So it is a cool project overall, I would say.
I think so, yeah. Yeah. So the track I was looking for was Gumball Garden. So if you're wanting one that's a little bit more kind of riff-tastic and is maybe more of a song than a mood, then that would be one that I'd recommend. And I think this is one of the kind of stronger neo-psych bands that I've seen in a while that have actually got songs. You know, they kind of remind me more, they're more in that kind of vibe of somebody like Tame Impala or Temples, mm-hmm. that are maybe more song based than a lot of these psych groups that maybe kind of jam out stuff a little bit more. So maybe this track isn't kind of representative of that in a way, but this was one that when I've, over the last kind of couple of weeks, when I've been in the right mood for it, it's done that thing for me where it's just put me in a nice headspace.
Ah, well.
So that's why I brought it in.
Good. I mean, like, who can argue with that? You know, that's your own takeaway from the track. And if that's what it gives you, then I'm truly glad. That sounded kind of patronising, which I didn't mean to. I mean that genuinely. Like, if it does make you feel like that, I think that's really profound. It's good.
Yeah, it's good. I think it's a debut record as well. So I think the production values and the guitar playing and things like that, they're only going to improve from here, I'd imagine. So,
I mean, I'd bloody go. So. I mean, I don't mean to be snidey, cool, but that's not a guitar. That's not a good guitar solo. Like, I'm not in a massive band or anything like that, but I personally would not put that out. That state. I know it's part of the vibe, but it just doesn't really. It's just that it feels like a missed opportunity, like an anti-climax almost in a way. Maybe that's what they were going for. I don't know. Do you know whilst I was looking for a little bit of context to that track whilst I was listening to it, I read some comments that TJ Frieda made about this track, and I'd like to share them with you if that's all right.
Go for it.
You know they're going to be weird, don't you? You know, as I've said this, you know that I've picked these out because they're weird. He said, of this track, he said, "One night I connected with a loved one in a dream, except I was in their mind. I was standing right in front of them and I kept trying to call to them, but the world in this dream was too loud and noisy. They couldn't see me or hear me. Feather is about trying to help someone who can't be helped, but in the end you accept them for who they are and love them. No matter what." So that's what it's about, apparently.
He's already dead, Ian. Stop kicking him.
I have to say, like, I started off reviewing this by saying, look, given free reign, this is the kind of thing I would do as well. I totally get the appeal of it. I just think, just that one element of it, I think, would, you know, if you took that up a notch, I think I would have liked a whole lot more. So, undoubtedly now, this is going to be one of the artists that are going to contact us and say, yo, thanks for having us on the podcast this week. And you just know you've not listened to this, which is fine, because I've slagged you off. So that's good. Cool, man. So that is us having done quite a lengthy sesh this week. We've been interviewing and been reviewing and we've been bantering away here for a good couple of hours now. So it gives me the greatest of pleasure to say 7 hours before this podcast is due to drop that we now come to Andrew's final words. Allow me to gracefully cover for him while he gets his notes together and say that we really appreciate your continued support, I was going to say patience with, continued patience with and support of this podcast. Thank you so much for all the nice comments that you send us and all the sort of likes on our social media posts, and most of all, of course, for just listening to the podcast. That is the main way that you support the podcast. We went over another milestone. We haven't even mentioned this to each other, Andrew, but another listening milestone during the week in terms of numbers of thousands of downloads. So that is so exciting to be able to say that out loud. That's amazing. Makes us want to keep coming back. If you're wondering, like, oh, you've missed a few weeks recently, does that mean that, you know, the podcast is losing energy or whatever? No, literally, I was on, like, I just couldn't speak last week at all. So we kind of missed the wee window and then we were otherwise busy, so we couldn't do it. But no, we really appreciate your support and we are back on our weekly cycle, I really hope. So probably now you're maybe asking yourself, like, well, are there any ways that I could financially support this podcast? And do you know what, Andrew? There are actually ways you can do it. You can just take yourself along to www.buymeacoffee.com/WeHeardWonders. And for the cost of a coffee or a couple of coffees, you can support this podcast. And we put all that cash towards the ongoing running costs of this podcast. And there are a few, like we have costs for Zoom, we have costs for paying performance royalties, and we have costs for hosting the podcast online as well. So it's not something we do for free. So we do appreciate it if you can stick the old hand in the pocket and rattle about in there and get us a couple of quid. That absolutely helps. So thanks so much again to everyone who's already supported the podcast. And Andrew, my friend, over to you.
Thank you very much. Yeah, so the final word for this week. So I was thinking about gift. I was thinking about psychedelia. And I was also thinking about this idea of being delighted. So I have got a gift from Euphoria, a lost psych classic from 1969.
Another one.
You know I love this stuff. And there's been, I think there was like four different Euphorias around the same time. So there was an Australian one, there was a British one, there was even an Indian one. And this is the American one. And it was a duo, Hamilton, Wesley Watt, and William Lincoln. And they created this really wonderful record. Some of the tracks are kind of straight ahead, kind of country rock and the kind of Gene Clark Birds style, and kind of Crosby, Stills, Nash, that kind of thing that was going on around that time, that kind of West Coast sound. And then there was some stuff that was more kind of baroque and some really kind of interesting kind of collage style psychedelia as well on this record. And the track that I've chosen to play us out with is one of those. So, I mean, there's a lot going on in this track. There's banjos, there's piano, fuzz guitars. There's lots of like kind of found sounds and things. So there's like, I think there's like explosions at one point. There's somebody talking in Vietnamese. there's gunshots and laughter and all sorts. It's a proper trip. It's like something that you'd get on like the White Album or something like that, I think. So this is a real kind of standout track for me on the album, but I'd really recommend checking out the album. It's not on Spotify, but you can get the whole thing on YouTube. So I'll say again, A Gift from Euphoria by Euphoria. And it's playing us out this week. The track is called Did You Get the Letter?
Yeah, good question. Did you get the letter? I don't know. Let's find out. So I guess all that's left for us to do is to say goodbye, everyone, and we shall see you down the road.
Yep, see you next week, guys.
I live for you so you might love me. I only ask for you. read a letter that I left upon the doorstep yesterday. Did you open it and laugh at all the silly things I felt I had to say? Does the morning make you lonely? Do you miss me all the time? Do you have much fun without me? Would you like to still be mine? Sorry girl, but now I know things will be much better now you've gone. Oh, oh. I'll be there. Sorry girl, but now I know things will be much better now you've gone home.
Bless you, child. Bless you.
And I'm going to be your friend.